very excited about. I want to start out with just a few definitions. It's probably the wrong end of the meeting to be defining these terms, but the genome, obviously, is the whole set of DNA that comprises cattle. The genetic markers allow us to track regions of the genome through different generations. Some markers are going to be linked to or explain phenotypes that we observe. You've heard the term SNP a number of times. It stands for single nucleotide polymorphism. It's a type of genetic marker. It's the simplest of the many forms of genetic markers and the easiest and least expensive to genotype. And then a genotype is the form of DNA present at a specific location in the genome. So you've also heard about whole genome selection on and off throughout the convention this year. And I'll go through that in a little bit more detail. Whole genome selection is a process that uses genotypes on thousands of genetic markers, like SNPs, to predict breeding values or EPDs. Like the marker sets for traits being offered now, but with much more density. Genetic differences in DNA that cause phenotypic differences are likely close to many markers, and so there's a variety of markers that could help us to account for that variation. The whole genome selection approach accounts appropriately for ambiguity regarding which SNP influence which traits. And this is one of the real challenges that we've had with the more with the types of DNA tests that we were seeing several years ago, where we're trying to hang our hat on the fact that a specific polymorphism had a lot of effect on a trait. And we had to go through all this validation process and be really sure if there's only one SNP in a test that we're going to be using commercially, we want to be darn sure that that SNP actually works. But if we had hundreds or thousands of SNP in a test, it really doesn't matter so much if there's 10% of them that don't actually do anything. It's really not penalizing us much. And by accepting the fact that there may be some there that don't do anything, what it allows us to do is to bring in a lot of these genes that have smaller effect, and in aggregate, they account for very much more of the genetic variance than we could possibly hope to with only 5 or 10 SNPs. And so it's potentially a much more powerful technology than what we were using several years ago. But as of now, the technology is somewhat unproven still. We really don't know how well it's going to work. We have a lot of work to do on it. It looks promising right now. There's a lot of effort going into making it work. I think there's good reason to believe that it will work. But we still have to show that it'll work. So that's a lot of the basis for the project I'm going to discuss with you. Now, the other problem with whole genome selection is that in whole genome selection, we would maybe be giving the breeder genotypes on hundreds, thousands, or 50,000 individual locations throughout the genome. And nobody can really look at that and interpret it and make sense of it. You wouldn't know, even though you had much more information, you almost would have less information with which to make an informed selection decision as a breeder. So it's a technology that really needs to be merged into the genetic evaluation system, as Mike described very well earlier, in order for it to have value. And before we can move something like this into the National Cattle Evaluation System, we've got to have a body of data to work with as a starting point. And so the way we looked at it is, should we be fairly ambitious and try to go ahead and bring that body of data into being so that we could kind of jumpstart the system? And that was the philosophy we were looking at as we considered doing this project. So at that meeting last August, we kind of asked, is now the time? We thought it was, and I think there are several reasons. And the first reason is the massive technological advances that have occurred in genotyping markers in beef cattle. And this slide represents what we've called the 50K chip or the 50K SNP chip. I think you've heard it referred to throughout the meeting. This is a really powerful technology for us. It allows us to evaluate 50,000 distinct locations throughout the genome in one assay. It's working very well. It's a result of a consortium that included the Beltsville Agricultural Research Center in Beltsville, which is part of the Agricultural Research Service, USMARC, the University of Missouri, and the University of Alberta. And those four groups worked together very effectively to provide this tool that really is, we say it's going to revolutionize the beef industry. We've said that so many times over the years, I hate to say it, but I mean, this really is changing the way that we do DNA work in beef cattle. Okay, the second thing is that we had already been developing a fairly powerful resource population at the USMARC that included over 3,000 head of animals with complete pedigree, breed composition, etc. They were extensively phenotyped for a variety of traits. And so among those cattle, we'd have over 2,000 with individual feed intake. In the finishing or heifer development phase, we'd have over 2,000 with carcass data, including slice shear forces, an indicator of tenderness. Rib dissection is a better indicator of composition, et cetera, et cetera. 1,300 plus with age of puberty, pregnancy rate, and subsequent maternal performance. Over 1,100 that eventually will have feed intake as mature cows. It'll let us look at estimation of mature maintenance requirements and the correlations between those mature measures of maintenance requirement and feed efficiency as a growing or developing animal. There'll be over 3,000 that have calving and the more common calving and growth traits. And there's about another 4,000 plus animals that we're not running the 50K chip on individually, but by leveraging previous investments in other genome scans on previous resource populations, we can still make quite a bit of use of the 50K chip together with the phenotypes on those animals to extend this data set. And so we feel like it's a pretty good resource for what we call a training data set, which allows us to establish the relationships between the SNPs and the economically relevant traits. So in whole genome selection, we kind of have two steps. We need to do training, and then we do application. And we felt that we were in a position to do a good job with the training portion of it. And then, as Bill indicated, we had a really fantastic group of people that came to Clay Center last August. You'll recognize there's a lot of breed associations represented here, a lot of good scientists. And this is a collaborative project, and it was intended from the outset to be a strong collaboration between the breed associations and scientific community. And we feel very good about that. It's generated a lot of excitement within the breed associations and the breeders, and we're excited about doing it. And so I'll go on and try to explain to you what our objectives are here. So the way that the project is structured is that we ask the breed associations to choose the bulls and provide semen as a DNA source to us for influential sires within the industry, and our target has been to pull in about 2,000 of the most influential sires in the beef industry. And then USMARC offered to run the 50K chip on those 2,000 sires. And both of those, I should say, are sizable investments. Running the 50K chip on 2,000 sires is a pretty sizable investment. But gathering up that semen on 2,000 bulls is also a very sizable investment. The breed associations are pretty heavily invested in this project. Is that right, Bill? And it's not just it's both a monetary investment and a time investment. And the time investment in gathering that up is not trivial. And we really really appreciate the efforts of the Bridge Associations to do this. And then for the next phase, yes, Mark is providing the training data set for that portion of the whole genome selection approach. So we have several objectives that we feel we can accomplish through this project. And I guess the one that we're looking at as our first objective, probably the most exciting objective, is that we think we can extend then genetic predictions from the U.S. Mark phenotypes, the training data set, to industry bulls. And it would be to these 2,000 bulls that are included in the project. And so the way we would envision that happening is that we would compute EPDs for traits that are not typically reported, such as feed efficiency, and we would deliver those to the breed associations. It's really up to the breed associations whether they distribute those or not. We certainly hope that they will and expect that they will. We're not doing this to compete with other organizations that are computing EPDs. And our initial efforts will be for those traits where we don't have to worry about this merger with phenotypes and pulling it all together. Our sense is that right now the industry is in quite a state of flux in terms of who's doing genetic evaluations. There's a lot of challenges for those organizations that have stepped forward and taking the challenge of servicing the industry in this way and incorporating DNA tests into those evaluations, I think has to be pretty low on their priority list. And so it's something that we can do as kind of a one-off thing, provide a service to the industry fairly quickly, and it doesn't really compete with what's going on in the rest of the industry in terms of computing EPDs. That's our objective. As soon as the industry is ready to take over that EPD computation, we are most happy to transfer that to other parties. And that is clearly our intention. The second objective that we would hope to accomplish with this is to validate the effectiveness of the whole process of whole genome selection. And to do that, we'll use our data from Clay Center as a training data set for the traits that are routinely evaluated in National Cattle Evaluation. We'll compute EPDs for the 2,000 bulls for those traits, and we'll compare them to the EPDs from the breed associations. And that will give us a measure of how effective the whole genome selection process is in predicting genetic merit, and it'll give us an independent data set from which to do that. And then finally, after we've gone through that validation process, we can combine those two sources of data and get even better estimates of actually bring the EPDs of the 2,000 bulls in as part of the training data set. We can improve the accuracy even further. And I'm really excited about that component of it, because I think one of the big questions that remains to be answered, and Dick raised it earlier in his presentation, and others have talked about it, but you know, we really don't know to what extent these DNA tests have to be specific to particular breeds or to subspecies or other different groups of animals, or to what extent they're just general across the board. And we're not, you know, trying to figure that out for feed efficiency as our starting point is not the way to do it. To do that well, we're going to have to look at traits where we've got massive amounts of phenotypes. And that's the traits that are routinely recorded in our genetic evaluations that we have EPDs for. And so having the 50K data on 2,000 bulls that span 16 breeds is going to be a phenomenal resource with which to look at those kinds of questions. And so we're excited about that application as well. So these are our target numbers of sires by breed. We asked the breed associations that are participating for numbers of animals registered or numbers of cows in whole herd reporting, and then we learned that most breeds are somewhere in between, and it's really hard to come up with a fair set of numbers to look at influence on the breed. But we tried to make this distribution of numbers of sires reflective of how much influence the various breeds have on the industry. It's not proportional to registrations or cow inventories. We didn't think that proportional was the right way to do it. So we gave a few bulls to every breed just for being on the list, and then we assigned some of the rest of the bulls proportionally, and we put a cap on the maximum proportion of the project that could go to any one breed, and that was at 20%. And so you'll notice Angus has just 400 sires. But we think 400 sires is going to characterize the Angus breed pretty well. So those are the numbers we're aiming for. The sire sampling criteria is a little bit different, quite a bit different actually, from what we use in something like our germplasm evaluation project. And we decided to, for this project, we wanted the breed associations to tell us what represents their breeds. We get a little bit accused sometimes in the germplasm evaluation project of maybe being a little too heavy-handed in how we select the bulls to be. I mean, our objective there is to just be as fair as we can and make those bulls as comparable from one breed to the next as possible and as representative of the breeds. But for this project, we thought it was more appropriate. This is not a breed comparison project. We let the breeds decide what bulls really represent their breed. The guidance we gave them is that these bulls should be current candidates for selection, so that as we produce, we or others produce EPDs, especially for traits that are not currently available through National Cattle Evaluation, that those EPDs can actually be used to make selection decisions. If all we got was a bunch of old bulls that were 30 years old and nobody was going to use them even if they looked great, then we hadn't accomplished our first objective. Okay, so we wanted bulls that were candidates for selection, and that means either the bull's still around or there's semen available on him in sufficient quantities to actually use him. We did want bulls that were high accuracy because that helps with that second objective of doing the validation. And we'd really like high accuracy for some of the rarer traits like carcass traits. We wanted bulls that were influential within their breeds, and we wanted the bulls that were selected to sample the breed as broadly as possible so that it's not just a matter of, we're not trying just to minimize relationships among the bulls, but we'd like to try to sample most of the major bloodlines within each of the breeds, even some of them that maybe weren't quite as influential. If they're just really unrelated, let's try to get a representative in there. Okay, our current status is that we have run the 50K chip on the training data set. That process has generated roughly 150 million genotypes. For comparison, in about the previous dozen years, we generated about 1.7 million genotypes. And I'm sure we spent many times more on those first 1.7 million than we spent to get these 150 million genotypes. The analysis of the training data is underway. My colleague Warren Snelling is heading up that effort, doing a fantastic job with it. We have semen on hand on about 1,300 or roughly two-thirds of these bulls. We're going to be harassing the breed associations in the next couple of weeks to try to get the rest of that in. Pretty soon, in August, we'd like to shift from DNA extraction to starting to run the 50K chip on the 2,000 bulls themselves. And as we get that completed and we get what we need to have done on the training data completed, then we'll start shifting analysis efforts to the 2,000 bulls. These are some of our preliminary results that Warren has generated. You know, recognize that we've got a graph for each trait, and this represents positions along the genome from chromosome 1 to the X chromosome down here, chromosome 29 and then the X. And this is just the amount of evidence that we have for an effect at each of these positions. And with 50,000 SNPs, each one of these little lines actually would include quite a few different SNPs. It's not each line is a SNP. So you'll see some patterns. There's some regions of the genome that affect a lot of traits. Our assessment is that this looks pretty encouraging. We still have a lot of work to do on it, but we're excited by what we're seeing so far. And there's no question we're going to pick up genetic variation with the approach. Some of the pitfalls that we need to keep in mind, as I said earlier, and other speakers have emphasized, you know, we don't really know still to what extent this whole idea of whole genome selection is going to work. We think it will, but the proof is in the pudding, and we're anxious to get there. There is some concern we may need more than 50,000 markers in order to really account for as much of the genetic variation as we think we need to. We just really won't know that until we get a little further along in the research. There are some concerns that patents may restrict the use of the technology. We're working to get these analyses done, get them published, and hopefully protect at least a piece of it, a big enough piece of it, that people can use the technology freely. And that is our intention. We're in the process of developing some complex computational methods in order to deal with this data. It's a real challenge to deal just with the quantity of data that's there, and then there's also more theoretical statistical issues in terms of how do we best extract the value from this information. There's a lot of work going on around the world in terms of how we do this. I should warn you, the first results that we come out, I think, will be, we hope they'll be useful, but the statistics behind this approach is going to continue to evolve for a number of years. And we're not going to come out with one set of numbers from whole genome selection and then they stay the same. And VIF is well aware that's the same process we went through in the development of EPDs. We've maybe gotten a little bit spoiled in recent years that EPDs have started to become a lot more stable as it's become a more mature technology. But we're gonna be back into the mode of these things changing fairly rapidly. Really from several fronts now. The statistics will change, but also obviously the markers that are going into the test will change as well. And so we just might as well be prepared for change to be part of our lives for probably for the foreseeable future. But Warren has done some simulation to see what he thinks is possible with whole genome selection. And we're pretty encouraged by the results generated. You'll notice John pointed out this relationship earlier on some other results, but basically with the whole genome selection, we get an accuracy on progeny with no records that's pretty comparable to the accuracy of a progeny-tested sire based on traditional EPDs. So we're encouraged by that. We think we're going to need to continue to collect training data. That's our assumption. We're planning for that. We think we're not ready to recommend that breed associations and seed stock producers discontinue the collection of phenotypes for standard traits. We think we still need those phenotypes. Our germplasm evaluation project at US Mark is continuing. As many of you know, we're sampling new sires for the 16 breeds that I listed earlier. And we're starting to look at that project as a training data set moving into the future, a continual training data set. And I think most of us agree that that's something that we're going to need. We have other objectives for the project as well, but they're not competing objectives. So that's how we look at it, and we think that continued training is going to be fairly important. We think it'd be really great if we had some other training data, especially for some of these difficult-to-measure traits in other environments besides central Nebraska. But we're gonna do what we can there. We've heard a lot of comments about whole genome selection in the last 2 days. And John indicated earlier it may perturb the structure of the beef industry some. But I think that it's really too early in the process for us to make any conclusions about what it is going to do to the structure of the industry. I think it's appropriate that we think about the possibilities and that as we do long-range planning, we consider a lot of different possibilities for how things may emerge and evolve. But I'm pretty confident that it's going to create substantial new opportunities for the seed stock industry. I'm pretty confident that pure breeds are going to continue to be important in contributing to heterosis. I think that pedigrees are going to continue to be important. Dorian talked yesterday about how within a few years we may be getting complete sequence on some of the foundation or highly influential bulls in some of these breeds, and we may use that to fill down through the pedigree and fill in many other polymorphisms throughout the pedigree in between these SNPs in the 50K panel. I think that's a fantastic idea. I agree wholeheartedly with it. But it's somewhat predicated on the fact that we have a pedigree with which to infer those genotypes down through the pedigree. So I don't think we're finished with pedigrees. And I certainly don't think we're finished with phenotypes. I think that we're going to have to continue to collect phenotypes. And the ones we've been collecting easily and routinely, I think we're going to continue to collect easily and routinely. And I think there'll be some other phenotypes that we may go after in populations that are outside of the seed stock population. It may be more effective. And some of the examples of those are things like if we wanted to do experimental challenge experiments for disease resistance, we probably don't want to do that on the bulls that we're going to be selling as the next generation of herb sires. So the structure of phenotype collection may change, but I think seed stock producers still need to be thinking about collecting phenotypes. But as several speakers have mentioned, we need to think about that from a rational perspective, and where does the law of diminishing returns kick in? And so let's think about how we spend the collective resources of the industry most effectively. I want to just wrap up with acknowledging the various groups that have contributed to the project. I'm sure there's others that we don't have listed here. It truly has been a fantastic collaboration, and we really appreciate the efforts of everybody who has contributed to it. And I guess with that, I'd look forward to answering any questions that you might have about the project.
Questions for Mark?
Yes, Brant. That's still in our plans, yeah. So for those who don't know the background, the BCRC was mentioned earlier. It's a very large research project in Australia, and we have had extensive discussions with the BCRC and other groups, including the University of Guelph and the University of Alberta here in Canada. And that is our intention, is to try to do some cross-validation. That, as you know, there's some tricky aspects to that because there are differences in environment, and that's one of the benefits is we get to look at how these things perform in different environments, but we kind of run out of degrees of freedom if we try to validate and estimate genotype by environment and all in on the same experiment. So there's some challenges there in terms of how we interpret that. But yes, we are still planning to do that. I don't know that we haven't signed on the dotted line, I guess, all across the board. But that is the intention. Yes. We've left that to the breed associations to decide whether they felt they needed a license or not. And I know one breed association has sent out releases to the bull owners. I don't know if any others have or not.
I know a couple of different approaches, Sam, that some of the semen was purchased by some of the breeds, whereas some of them may have tried to get donations. I think that was some different approaches that were taken in collecting the semen. Again, if you're selling semen, I think there's opportunities that people can run the different tests that are commercially available today on those as well. Pardon? Well, again, we'll...
You have a patent on your bull? Well, we can debate that one later.
Donald?
You know, sure, we don't know what's possible, and, you know, we could do a simulation, I suppose, but that simulation is going to be highly dependent on the assumptions that we put into the simulation. A lot more dependent if we're selecting a subset of markers than if we're going across the whole genome. You know, if we're going across the whole genome, we kind of know what the total needs to add up to. But if we're going to select out 400 markers, for example, then what your answer is going to be determined almost entirely by how much of the variation did you simulate is going into those 400 markers.
The reason why I asked that was,